Welcome to the Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and with me in the studio today is USU's Extension Vegetable Specialist, Dan Drost. And we've got a lot to talk about, and hopefully your conversation or question will be part of that. All you have to do is call 1-800-826-1495. That's 1-800-826-1495. Or go online, send us your email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. Dan, thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here again. It's been an interesting spring.
Yeah, you know, it started out cooler, and then it was wet up until the first part of May, and then it's been hardly anything as far as moisture since then.
Yeah.
And then it was going warm, and then it kind of cooled down a little bit. It's been really pleasant this week.
I think the temperatures have been about right. You know, if you look at things and see how they're going, I think, you know, these modestly warm days and then, you know, not hot nights. I had a colleague of mine from St. George up earlier this week, and he was saying that the night temperatures are so very high. And, you know, he was wondering, you know, how, well, you know, it's kind of early, and he's a melon grower, and, you know, what is this going to mean for this? And I said, well, sometimes what that does is, you know, if it gets too warm too early and the night temperatures stay too warm, then that fruit sizing doesn't occur like we would like it. And certainly those of us in northern Utah aren't really even thinking about watermelons yet, but he's to the stage where he has melons that are like 8 or 9 inches long, and, you know, he's got another week or 10 days of sizing, and then there's that 10 days of...
They're that big already?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he plants early, and he's in a real warm spot, but he's just was a little concerned about the 100-degree weather that they're predicting for this week and what that meant for, you know, continual sizing and what could he do? And I said, well, I don't know how to change the weather. That's the one thing I don't know how to do, but I can tell you what might possibly happen and some of the ways that you can get around that problem of, you know, just keeping the plants better hydrated. And so watch your watering and make sure that they don't come under stress, because as that fruit begins to expand, you want it to continue to just on a constant expansion rate so that it gets up to its optimal size.
So how does warmer temperatures in the evening, how does that affect the size of the fruit?
Well, it's the process of elongation of the fruit. So if you think about what a watermelon looks like, it has to elongate so that unless it's a round style type, and it has to expand outward as it sizes. And generally what we would like to see is when it's super high temperatures, the plant spends a lot more time dealing with the stress, and it's losing water at a faster rate through the leaf. And the net effect of that losing it through the leaf is that water is not going down into the fruit. And as a result, the fruit doesn't expand as we would expect it to. And so trying to keep it more hydrated ensures that there's adequate water going both to the leaf and going to the fruit so that you get that expansion.
So with that extra water there, does that also kind of lower the temperature a little bit?
It can help.
Plant?
Yeah, it does do that. But, you know, when you're dealing with a fairly hot environment and wind movement, there's a lot of that moisture would get dissipated. And so the cooling effect isn't as great as we would like it to be. The one nice thing about in the north here is that our day temperatures can be pretty warm, but our night temperatures drop back down into the, you know, high 60s or low 70s, particularly as we get into July and August. And the net effect of that is that puts less stress on the plant. He says that, you know, his night temperatures are now in the low 80s already. Yeah. And it's going to move into the low 90s at night, and that puts a lot of stress on the plant. So the plant has to work harder at photosynthesizing, trying to keep the leaves hydrated, and oftentimes the movement of water into the fruit, which allows it to expand, is diminished, and that then impacts the size of that fruit. Mm. And so that's a problem. And then it also can affect the quality. We see that when the day temperatures are very high and the night temperatures are very high, the plant tends to, at night, take sugars and respire to keep its cell running, keep the tissue fed, so to speak, when it's dark out and it's not manufacturing food. It has to get food from someplace, and that respiration process then extracts sugars from the fruit, and so the flavor isn't so good. And so Dr. Black and I were talking about this morning because he said, well, yeah, his wife had bought some watermelons, and they had come in from Mexico, and it's been pretty hot in Mexico already. And I said, yeah, Dawn had bought some watermelon, and it was just like, these things are wretched. I said, don't buy them anymore. They taste terrible. They look nice, but they didn't have any flavor, and it's been so warm during the day and so warm at night that the plant can't store the sugar in the fruit like we would like it to, and therefore the flavor isn't there, even though it may have the color.
So that can be an advantage for places where you can still grow watermelon, but the evening temperatures tend to be cooler, like in Cache County, because you can get some really sweet melons.
Very, very sweet ones, because we have those warm days to build up the sugar, and then at night it cools off, and so the plant doesn't have to respire away all that sugar that it manufactured, and therefore it just keeps pumping it into the fruit, and that builds up the sugar level. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is that, you know, we don't get watermelons until early August. Yeah. And here my colleague, or the grower that I'm working with in St. George, says I'm going to be starting to pick around the 20th of June.
So we eat his in June and July, and ours at the end of August and September.
And he's just always worried about size, because that's important to him, because his market wants a certain dimension and a certain look to the melon, a certain size to the melon.
And those are probably the ones that we wouldn't grow in our shorter season here, because it just isn't long enough.
That's right. And so, you know, it's one of those issues that kind of comes up on a regular basis. And so I'm looking at the weather and thinking, yeah, this is good and up here, and he's looking at it and it could be bad for him. And so he's kind of a little bit nervous about it and trying to figure out ways to deal with it and to maintain quality, because, you know, we sell by quality as much as we sell by appearance when it comes to a crop like melons, because there's nothing worse in the world than buying a watermelon that looks red and then you bite into it and it doesn't taste like anything.
Well, on the marketing for Utah, everybody knows a Green River watermelon. You see that name and where they're from, and you automatically think they're going to be good. So he's
concerned about these things, and so we were discussing them as we were talking and looking at some of the work that we've been doing together. And he was up here to you know, put his daughter's coming up to university, and so they had some kind of orientation, and so it gave us a chance to meet and talk. And then a couple of weeks I'll have to go back down there again and look at things and see where he is once he gets to the yield.
Well, you're listening to The Zesty Garden. Dan Dross, USU's Extension Vegetable Specialist, is my guest. And to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Or send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So we just kind of got started into tomatoes last month. So why don't we finish up that conversation?
Yeah, well, you know, it's in the midst of tomato time, and you know, a lot of people planted a little bit early this year, and then we had some frosts, and I heard a lot of people had to go back and replant, or they had plants that were kind of damaged by the cold weather and things like that. But now things are looking good, and plants are, you know, really starting to grow vigorously, and I have the first blooms on mine, and so that's about right. And so that means about 30 days from now, we should start seeing some tomatoes coming off of that if conditions are good and we manage them carefully and we treat them like they're supposed to be treated. And so that would mean, you know, somewhere around between the 1st and 10th of July, I'm expecting to see, you know, some cherry tomatoes, because I tend to grow mostly cherry tomatoes at my house. Use them for salads and throw them in cooking stuff, and they're, you know, quite nice to deal with. Plus, you can just go out in the garden and pop them off and just pop them in your mouth, and they taste so good.
This is a confession.
Yeah.
I'm a gardener through and through,
but I cannot eat
a fresh tomato. Yeah. I'm taking part in a food study, and some of the things they give us are plum tomatoes, and I hold my nose and eat them. If it's with something, take a fresh tomato and slice it up with fresh mozzarella and a drizzle of basil dressing, and you've got your own caprese salad. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you like that. You like that. But just by itself. Well, that's interesting. You know,
it's weird.
It's not weird. It's just, you know, we all have different preferences. So I think the main thing that we have to worry about when we're dealing with our tomatoes from now and until we start to harvest is that we are careful with how we manage our nutrition. Most of us in most home gardens, if one would be brave enough to do a soil test, and we've talked about this in the past, you would find that, you know, the phosphorus levels and your potassium levels are excessively high. And so
in most Utah gardens,
because people garden and they manage their gardens carefully, and they fertilize regularly. And as a result of that, we get the potential for an imbalance that occurs. Now, normally we would like in a tomato plant, we would like the ratio of nitrogen to phosphorus be about 1:1. We would like the level of nitrogen to potassium to be about 1:2, and that gives us the optimal conditions for growth that ensure a balance between leaf development and fruit development.
So you would see 15-15-30.
You could, yeah, but
30-30-15.
Yeah, as
if you can find something like that.
Yeah, you can't find it. Yeah. So you're trying to create this balance, but it's not really the fertilizer you're putting into the soil. It's what's in the plant, and the plant balances itself out based on what's available to take up. And what we tend to see is that people get a little bit aggressive with their fertilizer, and they put a lot more nitrogen into the situation. And the thing we know about nitrogen is that it is a leaf growth promoter at the expense of other plant parts. And I'm not interested in growing copious quantities of leaves on my tomato plants. I need to balance leaf development with flower and fruit development. And so oftentimes we see that gardeners keep fertilizing these plants, get way too much leaf growth, and then the plant tends not to produce as many flowers.
So they're acting like teenagers.
Yes, in many ways. and that affects our productivity. Too much nitrogen also tends to delay the ripening process of the fruit, so that tends to delay things as well. And as a result, you know, we're out of balance really within the plant. So we're adding lots of fertilizer to the soil. The plant is taking up luxurious amounts of what it wants to take up, which is mostly nitrogen. It's the easiest thing. It tends to promote the most growth. And that puts the N to P, N to K ratios in the plant out of balance because we're not really paying attention or we don't really understand what's happening. And so the important thing for us with tomatoes at this time is that if we've applied some fertilizer to the soil before we planted, we need to kind of delay putting on any additional fertilizer, like side dressings or adding some extra compost and working that in the soil, till we start getting, you know, a significant amount of fruit set on the plant. And then we can supply a small amount again so that we can maintain a ratio of leaves to fruits that's more appropriate. Because if we put it all on the front, then my plants are just mostly leaves right now. It just wants to continue to grow more leaves, and it really doesn't produce a lot of fruits. And that then delays productivity, and it also lowers productivity. And those things are the things that frustrate me. And so we have to kind of understand that and that's the big issue right now. Now, water is also going to be an issue at this time because we don't get much rain after the 1st of May or the 15th of May, and so we're relying on irrigation. And we also have to understand our rules that we were kind of emphasizing in a month ago.
Rules?
Yeah, so I want to do a refresher course because I'm going to come back to tomatoes, so don't go away, people. But I'm going to ask you to give me the rules that we talked about last month.
Crap.
And there are four rules that we specified.
Okay, and, number one.
Okay, so one, I don't care what order they come in. So, you know, as they kind of pop into your mind and we talk about them, it's good for our listeners too. You know, say to yourself, okay, what are the rules that Dan was talking about a month ago. See if you remember them. But what do you think one rule is?
Well, the number one I remember is never plant the seed too deep. In other words, it's the three times rule.
Okay.
You plant the seed three times deeper than its thickness, and not as it's standing up, but as it's lying flat.
Okay,
so the way, basically, carrots get pressed into the soil, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Okay, so that's one rule. What's another rule?
And this is where I'm going to flunk, because okay. I remember something about hot caps and so forth, if you okay. cover a plant, and something to do with the temperature and how you know when it's how many degrees outside. Like if it's 60 degrees outside, you add 30 on top of that.
Okay, good. You got that
Ooh,
one.
Ooh, so I got number two.
So I'll state it to you. So you got the 3X rule, and then there's the 30-plus rule. So that says that the temperature under in a hot cap or in a wall of water or whatever is going to be 30 degrees warmer, basically, than whatever the outdoor temperature is at the particular time. And it's usually just during the day when the sun is shining.
In other words, don't be having hot caps on during the day right now.
Well,
because temperatures are going
or
up
open,
to 80.
Or open them and ventilate yeah. them and then put them back yeah. at night, because it was 39 degrees here in Logan last night.
It was cool.
Yeah, so you may want to use that yet to kind of hold a little heat around it, but you got to be thinking about what it's going to do during the day. And it's going to go from essentially 40 degrees overnight to 80 degrees today. That's a lot of difference. So that's rule number two. What's another rule?
I'm sorry. The other two that we have covered, I absolutely uh-huh. cannot even remember, so I flunked the test because that's only 50%.
Do you remember the one-finger rule? If I said
yes.
that? Yes. Okay.
Okay. So the one-finger rule is you plant your transplant one finger up the stem from where it is in the pot.
Okay, yeah. So the root ball should be covered.
Do I get credit for that?
No. And that's okay. I mean, I was going to let you go out and use an open book, but you didn't even have the open book. So the one-finger rule basically says if you're growing a transplant or if you purchased a plant transplant, make sure that you cover it with at least one finger's level of soil so that the root ball doesn't dry out, and then water it in well. Okay, and then do you remember maybe the fourth rule that we talked
about?
Not
even close.
Okay, well, it also has to do with transplants. And how much roots are on the
transplant. Oh, yes. If you pull out the transplant and take a look at it, and is it more than 50%?
Yeah.
You see more than 50%. That's yeah, too many roots. You need to get them planted.
Yeah, so what we call that the 50% rule. And essentially when you buy transplants, and most of us have gotten all of our plants planted, so this isn't, you know, kind of applicable to right now. But if you're growing transplants, when you pull them out of the pot, you should see 50% root and 50% soil, or the mix that the plant was grown in, and that's a good stage to actually transplant. The plant will establish itself rapidly. So those were the four rules. But now,
so partial credit for three and four means I actually get full credit for one, so that's 75% and I got a C.
Yeah, you sound like my students, you know. I was close on that one, Dr. Dross. I'm sorry that, you know, can't you give me some credit for it? Can I do extra credit for it? No, you don't do extra credit. The math
right.
didn't work out today, so okay. Next month we'll quiz you again because we're adding a new rule today, and it has to do with irrigation, and it's called the tall, short rule, okay? Or you know, and basically the tall, short rule has to do with how much water we're going to add to the soil in dealing with our irrigation needs. So the rule goes, as tall as the plant grows, that's how deep the root goes. Okay, so it's a kind
yes.
of it's a little rhyme that you need to kind of think to yourself. So the tall short rule, why I call it that, is that tall plants have deep roots and short plants have shallow roots. In other words, how deep they go in the soil is shallow relative to a tall plant. And therefore, when we're thinking about irrigation, we need to use that to make sure that we're not over-irrigating in our gardens. Okay?
Otherwise, we're just wasting the water.
Well, yeah, we're wasting water.
But now you also need to water deep enough to make sure you fill the profile.
The profile,
for that
plant. That's right. So what do you do in your garden? What plant? Tell me kind of if I was going to start on the north side of your garden and work my way to the south side of the garden, give me a layout roughly of the plants that you have from north to south in your garden.
Well, I'm always changing.
I know that, but different. I don't care about last year. I don't care about
year,
the rotations.
It's corn in the north part.
Okay.
So the roots of the corn really go as tall as the corn gets?
Yeah.
That's pretty deep.
That can be pretty deep, yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about 7 and 8 foot corn.
Yeah, and they don't go that deep, but we're going to get back to the relative nature of things. Okay, so it's
corn on one end where the irrigation comes in, and then at the far end is where the potatoes are.
Okay, and then what's in between?
And then what's in between are tomatoes. They're short, tall. I mean,
all mixed together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So this is my point. Now your garden is really helping me strengthen my argument. Okay. Now that's good because as we think about our gardens and we think about our irrigation, you have to make a decision. How much do I water? What do I water for? What's most important in my garden? And so if we think about tall plants, plants like your corn, plants like, let's say, a vining crop like a squash plant, a winter squash or a pumpkin or a cantaloupe. And then we think about crops like lettuce and onions, which grow relatively close to the ground. Therefore, you know, if our rule applies, they tend to have roots that aren't going very deep in the soil. And then you got intermediates like a tomato or a cabbage or a potato or something like that. Then what we're looking at is variation throughout the garden in terms of these heights. And so as you think about how much you need to water, you have to make some decisions as to what's most important to you. Okay?
Okay.
So right now you just say, well, I'm going to water and I don't know what I'm going to be watering for. And so in effect, in some crops, you're probably underwatering and in other crops, you're probably overwatering.
Oh, I know that. I mean, I just, with my flood irrigation, I figure, you know, I rotate my crops around and this is really the first time I'm thinking, well, maybe I should be planting more from tall to short.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of those types of things as we're dealing with the various crops that we're growing. But most gardeners tend to just randomly place plants in their garden without considering it. And for those that are using some alternative type of irrigation system like drip or something like that, what you can do is you can, it doesn't matter as much because a drip line allows you to turn things on and turn things off. Whereas a sprinkler irrigated system or a furrow irrigated system, you know, we tend to put water in and it covers a larger area and therefore it gives us less control. So as we think about our tall short rule, it basically says that plants that grow tall tend to have deep roots. That's what I want you to think about. And plants that are short tend to have shallow roots. And the difference tends to be a tall type plant like a corn or a squash or an asparagus or something like that tends to have roots that probably go down 3 or 4 feet into the soil. Okay, so that's the deep component of it. A plant like an onion or a radish or a carrot, which tends to be relatively short, has roots that maybe only go down 12 inches or maybe at best 18 inches. And then those intermediate ones, things like a tomato, things like a broccoli plant, things like a potato, tend to be around 18 inches to 2 feet in the soil. And so when you think about what you're doing in the garden, if water is a resource that we tend to have somewhat limited to, or in my case where I have to use culinary water for it and I'm paying for all that extra water that I have to use, I need to be thinking a little bit more about how we can do this.
So this is where using water from the canal, you're not really thinking, I mean, you pay a one-time fee and then You don't really care about it the rest of the year. So you're
but
doesn't encourage you to conserve.
Yeah, but if the water becomes short and the canal company comes back to you and said, well, you paid your fee, but we're going to put you on an altered schedule. We're only going to give you half the amount of water that you're allocated because we're short this year. And farmers have to deal with these things. Then you have to make some decisions in your vegetable garden about what's most important for you. And so you could water the whole garden with a smaller amount, which may benefit the short stuff, but would put the tall stuff in bad cases. Or where you have all the water that you want, you maybe don't seem to worry too much about the short type plants. And so, you know, you could start to think about rotating or locating plants in ways that meet this requirement of zoning.
Well, we have our first call. We have Betty in Washington County. Hi, Betty. How can we help?
Hi, Brian. I have tomatoes that we've tried. I live north of St. George, about 4,800 feet. And every year we've tried tomatoes. And last year we had beautiful plants, tiny tomatoes. And these were not supposed to be tiny. So we're trying to figure out what we're doing right or wrong. Well, obviously wrong. And I think it's a watering thing. What you told us about fertilizing, I'm going to pass that on to the rest of the family. But how often should we deeply water our tomato plants?
Yeah, well, it could be a couple of things that's going on. One of the things that we've noted in the South, as that temperature starts to build up, as we were discussing earlier, if you think about melon fruit sizing, tomato fruit sizing, exactly the same type of thing. That if the plant is under water stress, then the fruits can't continue to expand in size to meet their optimal mass for that particular variety. So if you're growing a cherry type, you can't expect a beefsteak tomato to grow from a cherry tomato. That's genetics. Now, watering can help you with that. And certainly nutrients can help you with that. Most of the time we have seen that it's pretty rare that nutrients are the problem in vegetable gardens because we tend to fertilize regularly. We probably bring in some compost. We do some of these things so our nutrient levels are good. So that brings us back to water. So in a hot environment like yours, even though you're up at 4,800 feet, the night temperatures are getting warmer. And your day temperatures are hot, and that then restricts the ability of that to size unless you water a little bit more frequently. So my suggestion to you to try this year is to do more mulching around the plant so that what we're trying to do is keep the soil a little bit cooler. And you can use straw. I like to use straw, but you could use grass clippings or pine needles or, you know, some kind of organic matter that basically restricts the sunlight from hitting the soil surface so that it doesn't heat up so much. And then when you water deeply, and a tomato plant water, you know, roots go down to about 2 feet. And down in your environment, you probably will need to water at least twice a week. A relatively deep watering. Now, you didn't say anything about what kind of irrigation you use.
We don't have any irrigation system. It's a very small plot.
Okay, so you're just watering by hand. Yeah, so you're standing there in water. Well, the better thing might be to do is to create a basin around the plants, like we would do if we were planting a new tree. Have a basin that you can fill up with water and let it soak down in there, and then fill it up a second time and let it soak down there. And that should then get that water deeper down into the profile. Plus, the mulching will help to restrict evaporation off the soil surface, and that will and it'll keep it cooler so that the plant isn't struggling nearly as much.
Well, those are certainly things we haven't tried, and I want to try because there's nothing better than homegrown tomatoes.
That's exactly right. So good luck with that.
Thanks, Betty.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. If you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. $14.95, or send us your email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with the gardening calendar, and then we'll finish up with Dan Drost, our Extension Vegetable Specialist, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the second half of the Zesty Garden. In our gardening calendar, USU Extension is hosting a Toughen Up Your Turf today at the Cache County Extension Office. Learn about smart lawn irrigation, maintenance, and reducing input with USU Water Conservation and Turf Grass Specialist Kelly Cope. Information is at 752-6263. USU Cache County Extension is hosting the Alternascapes Tour. That's this Saturday from 11 to 4 p.m. The tour features unique gardens that capitalize on water-wise and Utah native plants for our arid mountain region. Tickets are available at the Cache County Extension Office at 179 North Main or at the Cache Valley Gardeners Market. The Logan Iris Society is hosting their annual garden tour this Saturday from 3 to 7 p.m. Logan Iris Society members are opening their gardens for you to see some of the best varieties introduced in the last 20 years. To begin the tour, go to 171 West 300 North in Hyde Park. That's my house. A list of all gardens on the tour will be handed out at these locations. Additional information is at 757-5102. The Lunch and Learn series at the Logan Library presents wildlife conservation in your backyard with Michelle Sagers, Education Director at the Willow Park Zoo. That is next Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m. in the Jim Bridger Room. Michelle will bring an owl, a snake, and a cockatoo. For more information, contact the Friends Group at loganfol@outlook.com or visit their Facebook page, Logan Library Friends. The Tahnequit Nature Center in St. George will feature a course on cactus and succulents Saturday, June 14th from 10 to 11 a.m. Learn plant selections and the general scope of cactus and succulent rearing. Admission is free. The Tahnequit Nature Center is at 1851 South Dixie Drive. And then there are still plots available at the Cache Valley Community Gardens. Plots are 200 square feet. Gardening tools and compost are provided. Gardens are located in Hyde Park, 725 South 50 East, and in Nibley at 770 West 2680 South. To register, call the USU Cache County Extension Office, 752-63. And then I also wanted to point out that the Wayne County Farmers Market is held Saturdays at 187 West Main Street in Torrey. The market runs through October. Information is on Facebook, Wayne County Farmers Market. I have with me in studio Dan Drost, USU Extension Vegetable Specialist, and we're talking vegetables. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495 or send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. And our next caller is from Jim in, did I say St. George? Okay, Jim, thanks for calling. How can you help?
Well, I've had a tough winter down here. We got to 0 degrees, and I've lost about half of my olive trees. What I'd like to do is replace them with something that's perhaps a little more robust. And I was wondering about pistachio trees.
Jim, I'm not the guy to ask that question. Perfectly honest, okay. I do not know anything about pistachios because I grew up in the northern half of the U.S. And it wasn't until I was, a little bit farther along in life that I even saw a pistachio, let alone ate one. So
now, I do know there's some pistachio trees here at Utah State.
There are.
So whether they grow in really warm climates, I don't know. This is kind of on the edge of their cold climate.
Well, they do. They're there along in California and southern areas of it. So I do know that they are a warmer liking tree. And they do tolerate some cold, but I just don't know how cold they get. And that's something that really our fruit specialist would be better able to address. And what I would suggest you do is email him. And you can go to the USU Extension website and look for Brent Black, B-L-A-C-K, and Brent is our fruit specialist, and he knows things about nuts as well, and I would send him an email and chat with him, and then he would get that. Or better yet, go to see Rick Heffelbauer, who is the extension educator in Washington County. And Rick knows about pistachios, too.
Yeah, there's some great information at the extension website. You could probably just type in pistachios
in their
search
engine. I don't
know
that we have anything on it, but Rick would be able to give you some really good advice. And he's right there in Washington County at the extension office.
Okay. Can I ask a zucchini question then?
You may ask a zucchini question, because I know I can answer that one.
Well, I figured as much. I planted some zucchini about, maybe 5 weeks ago now, and they have done absolutely nothing.
Transplanted them or seeded them?
Yes, I transplanted them from bottom at a local store.
Okay.
And after all this time, they're about... 6 inches tall.
Yep.
And they are doing nothing.
Okay.
The leaves are slightly yellow.
Yep.
And sometimes they, some of them are going brown. It's, it's like.
Yeah. Well, I think, how big were the plants when you purchased them?
About 4 inches tall.
Okay. So maybe 3 leaves or 4 leaves on them?
Yeah.
Yeah, so normally we don't like to buy plants, zucchini plants and watermelon plants and things that are that large. 1.5 leaf stage is a ideal stage to transplant at, because what happens is the plants are too big. They're kind of pot bound by the time you get them. You put them out in the vegetable garden, and if you're not watching them carefully the first week or 10 days after you put them in the ground, that root ball dries out, and then the plant doesn't grow out of that, and then they take on that yellow appearance, and you get some leaf scorch on the older leaves. My suggestion is that these things are not going to do anything for you. They're never going to grow out of this, you would be better for you to seed, actually, zucchinis. We find that they do much, much better if you just sow seeds directly. And get them started. And you could put a little hot cap over them or a milk jug after you seed them if you're dealing with colder conditions or cooler conditions. Get those seeds up and started, and those plants are much, much more vigorous. And you've still got some time. You could reseed now, and those plants will take off and probably, do just fine. But these ones aren't going to do anything for you. I'm sorry about that, John.
Well, I've kind of come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
I mean... leaves are, like I say, kind of yellow, and with all the fertilizer I've got on them, I would expect even leaf burn to...
Well, you may, trying to get them to grow, if you've been fertilizing them, you're just kind of aggravating a problem that's already been there due to the plants being slightly on the large side when we're transplanting. So in the future, if you're going to buy squash plants or melon plants or cucumber plants, try and get the smallest ones you can put your fingers on. They should have a leaf or maybe 2 leaves at the best showing. And if they've got 3 to 5 leaves on them, they're too big already. They're pot bound and they're not going to take off. Okay.
Yeah. My green peppers, about the same time, they're doing about the same. Nothing.
Okay. Well, like I said, one of the things you can do, John, is to take them, pull up a plant that's not looking very good and take it down to Rick as well. He is a good diagnostician for problems, and he can help you look at that and see whether there may be something else going on. When you take the plants up, kind of dig them up and take some of the root ball with you as well. And go down to the extension office there in St. George, and he'll help you. Okay?
Last question would be, is there a type of tomato that ground squirrels don't like?
In fact, I think they like them all. If they're anything like the ones that I know, they go after them all. So, I don't think there's anything that you can do other than maybe put a cage around them, a wire, chicken netting or something like that to try and keep them away until the plants get a chance to get themselves established. We've had a problem with them as well in other areas, and that tends to be about the only thing you can do, bury that chicken wire around the plants in an attempt to try and just keep them away from the plants until they get going.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
All right, bye.
Thank you very much. I have a correction. The Lunch and Learn series from the Logan Library is now on Thursdays, and I had said Wednesday. So if you want to attend their next Lunch and Learn series with the wildlife conservation in your backyard topic with Michelle Sagers, it's next Thursday, June 12th from 12 to 1 p.m. Okay, we have another caller. We have John from North Logan. Hi, John. How can we help?
Good morning. Another couple of tomato questions.
Sure.
Black plastic in tomatoes to increase soil temperature and accelerate growth and earlier yields. How does that fit into the whole business of mulching and keeping the soil cooler and not stressing the plant?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in the past we've talked about these types of things. Ideally, the mulch that you're putting down with black plastic at this time of the year is designed to really warm up your soil so that that root system can get growing and get down into the soil and extract the nutrients and water that it needs. And so early on in the year, it's a wonderful addition. As we move into the hotter times of the year, that plant gets so big that it often shades the plastic, and so we don't tend to worry about it here in northern, in the northern part of the state. If you feel that your soil temperature is too hot, one of the things that you can do is then come back in with some organic mulch, some grass clippings, some straw, you know, some leaves, you know, whatever you have available that you can put underneath those plants to shade that plastic so that the sun isn't hitting it directly, and then that tends to give it, keep the temperature down. And so the plastic we're using early is designed to hold water in, to warm the soil, to keep the weeds away from the plant so that the plant has a chance to go. And so I usually find, and in all our research here in the northern half, I never bother to really mulch around a plant if it has black plastic under it, because the plant is so vigorous as it's growing, it essentially shades the plastic that it's growing on so that it's not a problem.
So you think the black plastic in Cache Valley is a good idea all around?
We're doing work on that, and we see, you know, up right now we have projects going on that are dealing with plants grown on plastic or not on plastic. The ones that are on plastic are about 1.5 times as big as the ones that aren't on plastic. And we got watermelons that are already starting to run. The ones that aren't on plastic aren't doing that.
Wow.
Our tomatoes that we put out 3 weeks ago are twice as big as on the plastic as they are. The peppers are showing the same type of thing. So, yeah, up here in the north, you know, you can start planting around the 10th to 15th of May on plastic, and you're just going to get much, much earlier production from your tomatoes and your peppers and your squash and all those other things that we would normally grow on it. So, yeah, I'm an advocate of plastic.
Is that a better idea than trying to buy a huge tomato plant pepper plant that's already flowered or fruited?
Well, anything that has a fruit
or transplant.
Yes. Yeah, anything that has a flower or fruit on it is a bad idea to buy, because the plant wants to put all its energy into that, and so it tends to inhibit the growth of the plant after you put it out in your garden, so we don't advocate that.
So buy the smallest transplant you can there and then just accelerate the growth once it's planted.
That's correct. Thanks so much.
Final question.
Well, I think Brian says we've got some time issues.
Yeah,
What's going on?
Go ahead and stay on the line, and we'll answer it off the air. We've got to get on to our next segment. So thanks for calling, but hold on, and he'll answer your last question.
And I'll answer your question.